April 6, 1989, faculty lecturer C. Michael Hahn, professor of church music, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary.
for our invocation and our meditation, we hear the psalmist say, "Sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, praise his name, proclaim his salvation day after day. I will sing of your love and justice, O Lord. Shout for joy to the Lord all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name, for the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations." We are privileged and delighted today to have as our faculty lecturer Professor Michael Hahn. From classroom to church to community, Professor Michael Hahn inspires and cultivates and teaches us and many others throughout the nations to sing and to make music. Since 1982, Professor Hahn has been our colleague, our friend, and our teacher here at Southeastern. The vitality of his voice and the merriment of his music and the vision of his spirit all lift us to higher experiences in worship and in ministry. Next fall semester, while he is on sabbatical leave, he will be in Africa researching their musical traditions and inspiring them to continue to make music. So today we are happy to have as our spring lecturer Professor Michael Hahn. We welcome him to this faculty lecture for this semester entitled "An Apologetic for the Use of Third World Musics in Baptist Worship." And at the conclusion of his presentation to us and for us, he will lead us in our benediction. Professor Michael Hahn.
Dr. Braswell, colleagues, friends, fellow learners, it's a pleasure to be with you this morning. In our efforts to lead worship effectively, those of us in the Free Church worship tradition tend to change the order of worship or add elements to our worship service with little thought. At the church I serve as minister of music, I have recently sought to enrich our worship with congregational song from various third world countries. While it is not difficult to develop a rationale for this practice on the surface, serious reflection is needed in order to intentionally and thoughtfully include materials in our worship that differ radically in musical style from those traditionally used. It is such reflection that I propose to initiate this morning. This reflection is also serving as a basis for my own field research in Africa during the fall when I will be on sabbatical. I will begin by looking briefly at the role of symbol systems and culture with an application to specific symbolic practices in Christian worship. Then I will discuss several issues that I feel must be examined before one begins the practice of including third world music in worship. These issues include selecting the cultures from which the music will be drawn, considering to what degree musical authenticity will be important in the presentation of the music, and establishing a cultural dialogue that will help us learn from the music being used. Then we will move toward the actual presentation of and participation in music from three third world contexts. I will mention several ways that this music can be presented and note examples from recent hymnals that include ethnic music. In all cases, I will attempt to frame this apology in terms that will have relevance to the musical layperson. Allow me to define briefly one term in the title of this lecture. The term musics, the plural, refers to the variety of musical systems encountered in other countries around the world, especially those outside the system of Western music. Just as there are many languages, there are many musics. This leads me to another area relevant to our discussion, the role of symbol systems within any culture. Anthropologists tell us that there are three symbol systems present in almost all, if not every, culture. These systems are language, music, and religion. Although language obviously expresses more than fact, words appeal primarily to our rational or discursive, sometimes called left brain, nature. Language, however, can very quickly move from fact to the expression of opinion, metaphor, deep feeling, and even ecstatic experience, the latter of which is very close to music. When language moves beyond discursive or rational fact, it becomes not irrational, but suprarational. Because these sounds are a form of expression, there is meaning, but not necessarily the discursive, left-brain meaning of language. Music appeals primarily to our feelings through the use of what Susan Longer calls presentational or right-brain symbols. Verbal or descriptive descriptions of a musical experience cannot substitute for the meaning communicated in that experience. Just as language can assume the characteristics of a presentational symbol through metaphor and super-rational utterances, music can function as a discursive symbol in a limited manner when it is used as a signal. The tones of a doorbell, for example, signal us to come to the door. Taps played at a military funeral is a recognizable signal as to the nature of that event. Commercial jingles on television that cause us to recall a particular fast food establishment in a rather Pavlovian manner are a signal to our appetites, or at least that's what the advertising agencies hope. It is, however, safe to say that language functions best when it is primarily communicating discursive or rational meaning, and music is most effective when it communicates primarily presentational or supra-rational meaning. Religious experience draws usually upon both of the other two symbol systems of language and music. Words alone cannot adequately describe all aspects of religious experience. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, our worship soon moves beyond words as we attempt to describe God's love for us and our response to God's love. Words, enhanced by music, help to round out that experience. But ultimately, religion needs its own symbol systems in order to express the realities and the intuitions of faith. Consider the power of these Christian rituals without hearing a word spoken or sung. Sharing the broken bread with a friend during the Lord's Supper. immersion in the baptismal waters, symbolizing death, burial, and resurrection with Jesus Christ. Kneeling at the feet of a fellow pilgrim with a towel and a basin of water and washing their feet. These Christian rituals are symbols of community, witness, and humility, respectively. Words and music might instruct and enhance these rituals, but cannot ultimately replace them. My focus will be on the use of music for the enhancement or enrichment of the symbols of worship, but not music as we usually experience it. Music from other cultural contexts has the potential to express Christian experience in new ways, causing us to reflect upon our worship with a new sense of awareness. In this morning's lecture, I want us to both rationally consider and emotionally experience some possible third world musics that might have the potential to enhance the symbols of our religious and spiritual experience. I want us to consider the exciting possibility of living not just within the culture that currently shapes our symbols of faith, but beyond our culture as Christians open to a revelation from God that supersedes the limits of our rather parochial awarenesses. Listening and singing to a few songs from around the world over the next 30 minutes will not make us citizens of the world. It might, however, make us aware of God's broader vision for the world through the eyes of Christians whose worldview is vastly different from ours. We will experience this morning music from three distinct cultures outside the United States. Asia, that's a very broad range of countries, Central Africa, and the general region of Latin and South America. Hispanic music is already having a significant impact on the major Protestant hymnals of our country because of the influx of Spanish-speaking immigrants into this country. Mission work in Africa and the rising interest by black Americans in their own African roots account for the inclusion of African hymnody in some recent congregational song collections. We are also aware of the growth of the Asian American community in our country. In Raleigh, the Raleigh area alone, there are Korean, Japanese, and even Indian congregations. The choice of these three cultures is not an arbitrary one. Several issues must be considered before choosing third world music for traditional Baptist or Protestant worship. First, music should be chosen that is distinct and different enough to offer a fresh perspective on one's normal symbolic religious experience. On the one hand, we must not choose music so alien to our experience that we are not able to perceive any order and thus feel only bewilderment or frustration. For the latter reason, music from, say, Tibet, or the Pygmy tribes of Central Africa, or from certain areas of India might not serve our purposes very well. Music from these regions reflects an organizational system not readily apparent to our Western ears. Therefore, we search for music that will be distinct from the styles generally familiar to us, but not so foreign as to alienate our American worshipers. A successful example of this on the popular music scene is that of Paul Simon's recent recording of Graceland. Simon succeeds in making a powerful political statement by performing with musicians from black South Africa using music from the South African experience. A second issue that is important to many serious musicians is that of authenticity in musical performance and presentation. Stated briefly, musical authenticity is the performance of music from a given period and/or a musical tradition in a manner that gives careful attention to the style and performance conditions used at that time and that place. An analogy for our seminary situation might be the study of the Gospels in the original languages and in the context of the life and times of the Gospel writers versus an understanding of the Gospels based only on the Shakespearean English of the King James Version. While the story of God's redemption of humanity is apparent in the King James Version, an historical and contextual study of the Gospels helps the life and message of each Gospel writer live for us in fresh ways. How authentic should we be in the presentation of music of third world cultures in our worship in this country? It has been noted by some that a concern for authenticity can become rather elitist and esoteric if carried too far. In other words, one can seek cultural authenticity at the expense of communication. Since elitism has no place in the worship of God, I would suggest that authenticity, while important in the communication of Third World music to American and Baptist worshipers, should not be the highest priority. For example, it is helpful to know that a particular African hymn grows out of the context of a given custom or practice in Africa. You might, however, find it a bit distracting if I were to attempt to sing that hymn in a distinctly African vocal style. While specific percussion instruments and physical movements might accompany this hymn in Africa, we may be only able to approximate the sounds of these instruments with what is available to us. We may also have to forego the accompanying physical movement in our Baptist worship because of our particular cultural inhibitions toward dancing. Third, maybe someday we won't have to, however, rather than focusing on authenticity to an extreme degree, I believe our purpose is to establish a dialogue or a conversation, to borrow an anthropological perspective, between the American worshiper and the worshiper of another Christian tradition through their music. As St. Francis of Assisi said, "Lord, help us to understand, not just to be understood." Participating in the music of other cultures as a part of our worship can help a congregation experience authentic meaning or understanding, even if the performance of that music is far from authentic. What can we learn from the use of third world music? In many third world cultures, it is rare to find a totally non-musical person. While some may be recognized for special musical abilities, all persons in these cultures have something to contribute musically. This is illustrated in the relationship of the performer to the audience, or, in our case, the relationship of the worship leader to the congregation. The more technologically advanced a culture becomes, the more musical participation seems to be relegated to the musically trained or the musically elite. As John Blacking states in his book, How Musical Is Man, in Western culture, the majority are made unmusical so that a few may become more musical. Traditional cultures, be they in Central Africa or in the rural south of this country, tend to include more persons in the musical performance. The lines between the performer and the audience often become blurred. I believe that one of the results of living beyond our culture and worship is to impress upon congregations that they, the people in the pew, are, as Eric Routley says, the first and most important choir. We need to move away from the spectatorism caused by the performance approach of many of our music ministries and toward a balance that uses the skills of the trained musician to facilitate the congregation in their participation more fully in worship. We can also learn from those cultures whose method of communication is primarily oral instead of written. Of course, not all third world cultures, as we characterize them in America, are primarily oral, but many are. Such cultures tend to have a higher degree of interaction between the worship leader and the congregation. A bias of which we must rid ourselves is the notion that cultures who depend primarily on oral tradition are somehow less effective in communicating the values of their culture. Mission work, for example, that focuses primarily on biblical translation in cultures whose method of communication is almost exclusively oral will be less effective than it might be. Many African cultures that depend on oral communication have a bias against the written word for several reasons. For some, the written word symbolizes the medium of the ruling and often oppressive class. For others, learning to read causes the literate family member to become ostracized from the rest of the family, much in the same way that a college or seminary student in this country might feel when he or she is the first one from the family to receive a higher education. Thus, a missionary must search for ways to communicate the gospel story to an oral culture. Another problem is the inflexibility of the written word over the spontaneity of oral communication. Cultures that draw largely upon oral tradition tend to value improvisation in story and song more than predominantly literate cultures. The use of music from some third world context offers us an atmosphere of spontaneity and improvisation needed in our worship, which is too often too predictable. The benefits mentioned above, and increased congregational participation and increased spontaneity in worship structure, focus on techniques that facilitate the worship experience. There are other implications for our worship as well if we choose to establish a conversation with the music of other cultures in our worship. Time will permit me to discuss only one. The use of third world music in worship can provide fresh meaning to long-established symbols of worship, such as baptism and the Lord's Supper. The manner in which other cultures celebrate the seasons of the Christian year can also give us new insights. It is our tendency to restrict the music that we feel is appropriate for communicating the message of our ordinances and Christian seasons to the point that our response can become either automatic or sentimental rather than meaningful and alive. For example, how often you could predict that "Blessed Be the Tie That Binds" will follow in most Baptist churches a communion service. Before we experience a sampling of music from three cultures, let us look briefly at the musical possibilities for using third world music in worship. The first possibility is to use both the text, usually in translation, and the tunes from a third world context, supported by instruments approximating the sounds of authentic instruments of the country from which the music comes. Our example from Argentina and one from one of the African hymns will reflect this approach. A second possibility is to use the melody and text from another culture, but the thoroughly Western instrumental accompaniments of piano or organ. This approach will be used in presenting some of the music from various Asian contexts. A third possibility is to use the music of the third world country with a fresh Western, with a text of a Western origin. In this case, the fresh musical idiom offers new meaning to a text with which a congregation already identifies. This was the case in the opening musical example where the choir sang a text by John Oxenham, a British newspaper publisher of the 19th century, who was also an active congregational layman. The pairing to music composed by the Taiwanese composer Yi Tu Lo, the pairing of a British text with music from the Far East, gives a whole new feeling to me about the meaning of this fine hymn. Later we will hear a British hymn text using the music from Jamaica that also reflects this approach. As we prepare to listen to and participate in some musical examples of worship music from around the world, let me mention that I have purposely avoided any analysis of the musical theory of each culture given the diversity of the backgrounds of our audience today. Suffice it to say, there are many reasons from the perspective of music theory why the music of various cultures sounds different to us. These reasons include the original languages themselves, the relative role of rhythm versus melody in a given culture, the instruments used, the various scales upon which the melodies are based, the vocal style, and on and on. While important and interesting, I feel that a discussion of cross-cultural musical theory systems is of little value if you don't have any experiential basis for that. Awareness is important at this point more than analysis, I believe. Almost all of the music that will be sung this morning is congregational rather than choral or choir music. Much of this music is being included in recently or soon to be published denominational hymnals, including those of the Methodist, Christian Reformed Church, Episcopal Church, and the Southern Baptist. I leave directly from this lecture to attend the concluding plenary session of the Hymnal Committee for the 1991 Baptist Hymnal, during which the final choices will be made. It appears to me at this point that Southern Baptists are going to have available to them more ethnic hymnody than ever before. Not enough by my way of thinking, but it's a start. This reflects the growing ethnic diversity of Southern Baptists and the work of music missionaries around the world. Each musical style has to my ears a particular essence that it contributes to our American experience. My conclusions are included on your lecture outline. Permit me a moment to move to the choir loft. First of all, let us experience recent hymnody from Asia. I find that to my ears, much of the music of Asia calls forth a sense of eternal mystery that is often neglected in our worship. Time seems to be suspended in the presence of God and in the reality of eternity. Listen to this Filipino hymn based on Psalm 19 by Francisco Feliciano.
For my God, in silence I marvel at the universe, the world it contains, the beauty, the harmony, creator of such perfection. Who else could it be?
Another hymn is based on the court music of Japan and speaks of the eternal reality of John 14:6, where we read that Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. Listen to the first stanza and then stand and join in with us on the remaining stanzas.
Thank you.
hope that hymn made you a little homesick for Japan, Bob Culpepper. From Africa, we have two hymns that are a result of mission work by Presbyterian missionary Tom Colvin. He often uses African melodies and adds his own text in order to teach biblical truths. Because of the strong oral tradition of African music, I find that many of these hymns reflect a narrative style of presentation, or in other words, African hymns seem to often tell a story. As is often the case in African music, the leader prompts a congregational response. Listen to the first hymn, a catechistic song, God Our Father Sent Jesus, which teaches the story of Christ's life to a largely oral culture.
God our Father, God our Father, sent Jesus for us all his love to you. He was born, in Bethlehem, in a lowly cattle pen, by the lake, of Galilee. Jesus, come walk with me to the poor. To the poor he brought good news, and the captive's chains made loose. He did die. Upon a tree. There he died to set us free
from the grave. Jesu, fill us with your love, uses a folk tune from Ghana and a text based on John 13:34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another even as I have loved you. This hymn is often used in the foot washing context. Join in on the refrain.
We should serve.
Third region of the world is that of Latin and South America. The choir will sing a choral selection from a Christmas work by an Argentine composer, Ariel Ramirez. It depicts the coming of the three kings in a rather celebrative manner, a different manner in which we would normally think of them. The essence that is evident to me about much of the music of this area of the world is that which can perhaps be described as fiesta. It is my experience that much of our worship could benefit from a little more fiesta. Unlike most of the other examples that have been sung, we will attempt to use more authentic South American instruments in our presentation of this selection. We would have continued on that, but I sense some of you might get up and dance, so we backed away. The final hymn uses a Jamaican folk tune with a communion text written by a contemporary British hymn writer, Fred Kahn. He wrote this text especially for this tune. This Lord's Supper hymn allows us to celebrate the joy of the resurrection of Christ through the fellowship meal, rather than the traditional Protestant bias towards the Lord's Supper as a somber remembrance of Christ's death, something that we've never quite gotten over from the Zwingli approach. Both have a place, but I find it refreshing to celebrate the Lord's Supper with a sense of Eucharist or thanksgiving from time to time. Join with us on the refrain provided in the lecture outline.
Pass the word around, those outbound.
again, pass the word around, so profound. Jesus lives again, earth can breathe again, pass the word around, so profound.
That one did not make it into the New Baptist Hymnal. But like many others, I made a valiant plea for it. They just didn't have the concept, which I think is a shame, really, given the activity and level of activity of our mission work throughout the world, that we couldn't learn from some of the other countries and how they celebrate the Lord's Supper in this case. We close as we began. Our benediction will be the earlier words of John Oxenham. Let's stand. In Christ there is no east or west, in him no south or north, but one great fellowship of love throughout the whole wide earth.
In Christ now meet both east and west, in him meet south and north.